This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Before September 11, 2011, Andy Holloman owned a successful travel agency in the Triangle. In the late 90s, one of his clients was found murdered in her home in Durham, and that got Andy thinking and writing the book that would eventually become Shades of Gray. This book is about a man named John Manning, who, like Andy, owns a travel agency and is a father. And when his child gets sick, he starts to dabble in drug smuggling to earn money for the procedure that could save her life. Andy Holloman is a writer based in Apex and is in our studio now. Welcome, Andy. Good to have you here.
Very, very glad to be here, Frank.
So tell us about your work, first of all, in the travel agency, and then about your client's death.
You bet. It's an interesting backstory. I sort of grew up in the travel business in the 90s and grew my company into a couple of locations. And the Durham location, one of my salespeople brought to my attention that there was a customer who was making some purchases in not an illegal way, but with some strange requests for air travel. And she wanted her tickets issued as check form of payment, which is unusual. And the reason was that she didn't want her ticket to say it was cash, even though she was paying cash. So that was the reason. And because they get screened when they're traveling. Consequently, the woman was found murdered in her home in Durham, and a seed was planted in my overactive imagination that wouldn't go away.
You also took inspiration for this book from your own struggles after 9/11.
Sure. And like a lot of people in that industry, 9/11 affected the travel industry severely. And my rapid growth in the 90s was a rapid decline, unfortunately, after the 9/11 events and some other things that affected the travel industry. So there were struggles after that.
So you got the story of the client. There's something shady going on there. A seed is planted, but then after 9/11, did all of that come together all at once for you in terms of the storyline for this book?
You know, it came together over the course of about maybe 2 years. Just wouldn't leave my brain. Anybody that has or is an owner of a small business or runs a small business knows the ups and downs, and when things are trying financially, then our minds wander into strange directions. I never did smuggle drugs. I can certainly attest to that, but we certainly know from being small business owners that we go through a lot of trials and tribulations, and they're things we think about.
Well, had you always wanted to be a writer?
It was not on my career path at all. It was quite fortuitous, and this story got planted in my brain, and I just couldn't really get it out until I physically wrote it. It was stuck and wouldn't go away.
So give us a little plot outline.
Plot outline. So John Manning is a 40-something single father with a lovely daughter named Lucy, and the client of the travel agency is Wanda. And they have a meeting, and through the course of their interactions, John and Wanda forge a partnership to smuggle drugs aboard a cruise ship. Lucy is ill, is in desperate need of a very expensive medical procedure, which John's insurance will not take care of. And he needs to raise cash fast, and his business is struggling. And so John and Wanda set about to solve that problem.
Will you read for us?
I would love to. Thank you. So the setup for this is in the beginning, or the first chapter, John and his daughter Lucy are in a restaurant chatting and having pizza and talking about miscellaneous things. A common theme for Lucy is that she wants to have a mom, which she doesn't have. So she nodded. She wiped her eyes with the back of her hand. "So can Wanda be my mommy?" She tugged at a pink ribbon that was barely clinging to her black curls. He was always careful to prepare her unruly hair as best he could each morning, but most ribbons or clips rarely survived an entire day. "Oh, Lucy, my little sweetie, I know how much you want to have a mommy, and I want you to have one too, but it has to be the right person for both of us. You can't just pick out people that you like and choose them to be your mommy. An overweight teenage waitress interrupted their conversation. John ordered a large pizza with double cheese. Don't forget to get me a Sprite, Daddy. You said I could have Sprite for a treat. No milk. John smiled at the waitress and she noted the order on her pad. But why can't I decide who I want for my mommy? It's just not fair that everyone else has a mommy, but not me. I want Wanda for my mom and Tanya for my sister. She poked her lip out in a pout. I understand, baby. I want you to have a mommy also, but it has to be someone that I want to marry. There's someone out there for both of us, and we'll find her someday. I promise you that I'll keep an eye out for the perfect person for both of us. He patted her hand. They continued to talk about other issues. None was as grave as finding a new mommy, but important issues nonetheless. She answered questions about school, told stories about playing with friends in the neighborhood, and detailed who was being nice and who was being mean. All of these things were quite wonderful items to discuss as far as John was concerned. He watched her as she spoke. She brushed her hair back so that the curls framed her perfect round face. Her brown, almond-shaped eyes were accented by her smooth white skin. He felt that warm glow in his soul that only she could deliver. Lucy radiated a joy and innocence that John could become lost in, making the other troubled parts of his life fade away. She was his whole world, and his love for her sometimes left him petrified with fear that he could lose her, especially with her recent health problems and the corrective surgery approaching. Several times a week, he would lie in bed with her while she fell asleep. Then, after she dozed off, he would move close to her face and breathe in as she exhaled. When he was that close to her, breathing her breath, his body relaxed and anxious thoughts faded away. Her sweet, warm breath filled the lonely spaces deep within his soul.
Andy Holloman and his novel Shades of Gray. So, Andy, we set up some of the tensions in here, how a business person has to deal with the anxieties of the ups and downs, the intriguing thoughts about becoming involved in a life of crime, and then this deep affection for a daughter. And this becomes a kind of driving force in this novel. When did that enter the picture for you?
Well, for me, in writing the story, being a father myself, and at the time, my daughter was approximately the age of Lucy, and feeling the way fathers do, I envisioned what would be the worst possible thing that could happen to a father who was deeply in love with their child. And so through the course of creating the story, it was important to lay down the fact that he was a very devoted father and very much in love with his daughter, as of course I am, and all fathers are.
Is that when this question, this moral dilemma posed itself to you? Because this could be a straight-up adventure where mm-hmm. we're sort of romping through and seeing whether or not you get away with it. But you pose a real moral dilemma. Can I sell drugs just this once to get the operation that my dear, and it's very clear how much you love her. I got to do it.
Right. And I like the structure of the moral dilemma. So the choices that people in the story make and the situations that all of us find ourselves, presented with and the decisions that we have to make, are that concept is very interesting to me. So in the construction of the story, I felt like under these circumstances, with these things happening, with a sick child, with a failing business, that would be the right amount of nudging necessary to have a person take the action that John does.
You talked about thinking about the worst possible thing that could happen. Is that something you did as a dad or something you did to get this book going?
Oh, gosh. You know, my mind, like most people's, can be my worst enemy. So as any parent can attest to, we all think terrible things and worst-case scenarios. So, yes, that occurred and unfortunately still does.
Was it hard for you to do? Because as a father, I will attest to that you for some reason run to the worst case and then try to imagine how you're going to deal with it all. all of which is fairly unproductive. But as you say, it's what we do. When you do that, then when you have to work it into the book, that becomes a kind of different level of contemplation. Did that become hard for you? Or
you know, I would say it wasn't that hard. You know, the story drove itself, and so the way in which, you know, worst case scenarios played out and the consequences that come about, particularly for John and for Lucy, it just fit. It just drove itself, and the story drove itself in the right way.
So. Did you have the ending in mind before you wrote the book?
You know, I didn't. And like I said, I couldn't shake the story out of my head, and I'd be exercising and come up with plot twists and ideas. And it wasn't until I was about halfway through that I hit upon what I thought would be a very interesting twist, and which ended up being the ending I stuck with.
Did you? You said that this really had never been anything you'd considered being a writer. Did it come easily to you once you started?
You know, I was surprised, and I think it's one of the things that kept me going. I was surprised that it came out in a format that I thought was better than I would have predicted. So the answer is yes.
Was there a lot of? Did you get to certain dead ends where you had to sort of throw stuff away and start over?
I did, and in a very funny dead end in a lot of ways, was that in 2005, 2006, I just put it on the shelf, and, you know, that novel was finished and had been fleshed out to a certain extent, and so my attempts to get it out and published and in the hands of agents and, you know, went nowhere, which is quite common, and so I hit a big dead end. So, in fact, it's a comical story because the proverbial shelf on which I stored my story was a 3.5-inch floppy drive, which when my story got reinvigorated, I could not find a computer that would take a 3.5-inch floppy drive. So,
wow. So what did you do?
Well,
you had to go find a computer that did it.
I found one.
You found one that did it.
And that solved that.
You know,
an
even funnier story is if it had gotten erased. See, I can go to worst case scenarios for your life a lot easier than I can for mine. That would have been. So did you go to, and how about along the way, did you consult how-to books? Have you read a lot of this kind of stuff? What were your models for this?
You know, I did. I did a fair amount of reading and along with, at the same time I was writing. And so those were a big help. I would tell anybody, a writer's group that I was a part of made a big difference. In fact, it was quite fortuitous that it actually got me to a publisher, but I did do a fair amount of research and learning along the way.
You take pains to make your main character an unattractive man. You write that he has thinning hair. He's got, you know, as you write about his weight. I also make his brother a shady character, and he's tall, slim, and handsome. So by comparison, why did you make that choice?
You know, the two brothers, they're half brothers. Travis is John's half brother. Just are a contrast in not only in the choices and, you know, the shades of gray and the grayness of their morality, but they're also physically very different too. And it just felt to accentuate John's lack of attractiveness. His brother is the opposite, and it was a good way to highlight that. John spends a good part of the book about being lonely, and being physically unattractive can certainly contribute to that.
You know, when we do this as a thought exercise, we like to think we can answer the question, what would you do if? Right. Did you have an answer going in? Did it change much? Did your thinking about these kinds of conundrums and dilemmas change as a result of writing this book?
I don't think it changed very much for me. One of the beauties of fiction is that you can play out all kinds of different scenarios and relish the thrill and excitement and horror in some cases of making certain choices. So I think that's the way I saw it, and that's the way it played out for me. So.
You're living in Apex now, the peak of good living.
Yeah, that's
and,
right. Yeah.
And North Carolina plays a role in your book. Lots of references to places all over the state. Do you feel like the state in some ways was a character?
The state is a great character, and I'm born and bred and love North Carolina, so it's a big part. It's set in Raleigh-Durham. We're going to you'll follow John and Wanda to the Outer Banks. So there's fishing trips to the Outer Banks, of which I do regularly. So North Carolina, she is one of the stars.
How about the reception? How's it going out there?
Much better than I anticipated. It's been a couple of months, and it's been great. Yeah.
Got another book on the way?
I got The Inklings, just The Inklings, but I'll let you know.
And you're selling this. It's in hard. Is it also an ebook, or are you just?
Yes, people can find it on Amazon. Just type in my last name, ebook or soft cover version.
All right, and then you're going to give us a hint what this Inkling is about, the next book.
You know, it's such an inkling that it's not really worth bringing up. I appreciate you asking, but
All right. We'll wait until it's out, Andy.
Not too long.
All right, Andy. Thank you so much for being in the program.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Andy Holloman, a writer based in Apex, the new book called Shades of Gray. On Thursday night at 6, Andy Holloman's going to be signing books at the bookstore Nofo at the Pig in Five Points in Raleigh. That's the state of things for today. Thanks for listening. If you have a comment about the show or you want to hear an archived edition of a past program, just go to our website, stateofthings.org. You can find links to calendars of events mentioned on the program. State of Things is produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen. Megan Matafari is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. Managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.